Well, hello, woo! Everyone. We are here.
We are excited.
It is January, and we are here for this new year. I feel like we haven't been here in a while.
In forever.
Yeah. We had to miss December because we were just super busy, but we are back now in January in this 2018 new year to join you all. It's the fourth Tuesday, and this is FYI, and we are Plant-Based OKC.
We are?
The three of us here in this room.
This is it.
This is us. We are Plant-Based OKC, and you can find us online at plantbasedokc.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Plant-Based OKC, or Instagram. And we come here to hopefully do what the intro says and to elevate your thinking, because we are here talking about something that I don't think a lot of people talk about, and that is the healthiest way to eat, which is a whole food plant-based diet that can help prevent and reverse all chronic diseases. And so what we talk about on this show, hopefully we bring you some science and unbiased information about that. And just to tell you a little bit about our background, if you don't, if you're first listening to us today for the first time, I am Andrea Conway, and I am a health coach, and I am here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
Who is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon here in Oklahoma City, and our good friend, Randy Titone.
I'm here in the flesh.
Who is just a jack of all trades.
That's exactly
right.
And
helps support us and promote what we do, and we provide monthly nutritional seminars at a hospital in South Oklahoma City called Community Hospital. The seminars we provide are always free of charge because we don't want anyone to not be able to get this information that we feel is vitally important. And so at plantbasedokc.com, you can get information about these monthly seminars that we hold. I'm always full way in advance, and so I try to get the next month's posted as soon as I can. January, which is this coming Saturday's event, has been full now since December, actually. So our next date after that is February 24th, which is on the website, and you have to go on there to email for a reservation. And these are held at noon. I provide a plant-based lunch, and you can get information on the website on that. And then we also will be at Rococo Restaurant in North Park Mall the first Monday of every month at 6 o'clock p.m. These, they're free to attend, but Rococo does provide us a plant-based menu. So if you'd like to eat dinner, you do have to buy dinner from Rococo, but the meals are always great, and the information is good as well. And so we would love for you to come to that. And you do have to call Rococo in North Park Mall for a reservation for that event. And then, of course, we're here the fourth Tuesday on FYI. So, you know, in January, everybody's always making these New Year's resolutions to make some change for the coming year. And I don't really like resolutions because I don't think people keep up with them. They either do it for a couple weeks and then forget what they even made a resolution about. And it's usually some kind of diet that fades away very quickly. And so I want to talk about something a little different. I know normally on the show we go into detail about the science behind a whole food plant-based diet and why that heals the body. But I want to focus on something a little bit different today. I'm going to focus on the emotion behind making a change like that and how to go about making a change like that in our lives and maybe what drives us to make those changes. And this is going to be based on a book that we read a while back called The Blue Zones. And it's, Randy, why don't you kind of lead us in some discussion about, first of all, what the blue zones are and what that kind of even entails.
Well, anybody who knows me knows that I love to talk about the blue zones and the science behind it, because so oftentimes people want to get down and dirty and talk about science when really all they're trying to do is justify a reason to eat Skittles. And so you know, is it organic or is it GMO or does it have gluten in it? And I'm thinking, you know, really, we're just trying to get you to not eat a cheeseburger, you know? Mm-hmm. So all of this really revolves around some real simple science and really the reason why we're here today. And that's because we all have identified our icky guy. And that is...
Does that mean like a guy you don't really like
well,
to be around?
That's exactly how you pronounce it, but that is a Japanese term or phrase which really translates into your reason for being or the reason you get up in the morning or the things that you're passionate about. So the Blue Zones was and is a National Geographic study that was headed up by a gentleman named Dan Buettner. And what he did was they got a map of the world out and they identified places in the world where people live the longest. They circled them with a blue Sharpie and that's how they got the term the Blue Zones. Very simple. The criteria was places in the world that had the highest number of centenarians or people living and thriving over 100. And so those places are the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica, Ikaria, Greece, Sardinia, Italy, Okinawa, Japan, and rounding it out and the only place in the United States, Loma Linda, California. So people ask, wow, how in the world and why is Loma Linda, California? Well, that's a very high population of Seventh-day Adventists, and to simplify it down, they don't eat meat. So these other places in the world, these other four blue zones, are places where people have a very strong plant-slanted, plant-based lifestyle. Do they eat no meat at all? No, they eat a little meat, very little on special occasions, more often than not. But especially in Okinawa, Japan, where people live longer than any other place on the planet, they really embrace this whole Power 9 principle. And it's when you boil it down and you look at it and you think about it, it is so simply complex. So not to get too bogged down.
So simply complex.
It is.
Please explain.
It is. That the complexity of what we eat and the way we live our lives can be really melted down to these nine principles that don't have to be complex. And the people in the Asian culture, and especially in Okinawa, Japan, have really embraced very simple principles that I think that us three have really tried to develop and thrive with over the last few years.
Well, what I want to say to being super simple, like what you said, is I think we try in here in the United States to make everything so complicated. Like what you said earlier, you know, people want to make sure when we talk about maybe how we eat, which is what we talk about all the time. You know, like you said, is it organic? Is it non-GMO? Is it gluten-free? Is it this? Is it that? And you put all these parameters on everything and try to make it so complicated when in reality, all we want to do is simplify things in life. We want to simplify what it is you're eating and not make it complicated. And that's what I love so much about the Blue Zones and their philosophy, these places in the world, their philosophies. They don't just go like with exercising, and you know how you see it. I mean, we have gyms on every corner here, and we're going to, you know, go do CrossFit and just go crazy, or we're going to do the, you know, everything has got to be just over the top. You know, we're going to do this 24/7. And
what do the people who live the longest in the world do? Their whole principle is they move naturally.
I know. It's not going to a gym, you know, at 5 a.m. every day. Something in their life that they do every day causes them to be active in some shape or form.
Walking to their friend's home, gardening, doing Tai Chi, doing yoga, just getting simple exercise outside. And it's a very simple thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually involved with community, too.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's where the the first of their sort of power nine is move naturally, and the second one is the purpose, and that is again
what we talked about, the ikigai.
And that, you know, I try not get too philosophical about it, but I think oftentimes you kind of identify your ikigai a little later in life. You know, you don't typically know that maybe so much when you're 20 as it is a little easier when you're
maybe
50.
Yeah, I don't think that's something you necessarily think about when you're that young.
Right.
But we're trying to change that, because I think
exactly
it's important
right.
to try and identify that early in your life, because I think that can make huge changes in your life going forward.
Right. And I think, you know, really, once you've sort of identified, or you have a feeling or a drive of what your purpose in life is and things that you're passionate about, that's really when your life, I think, kind of takes shape and you feel like you're making a kind of a difference in the world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Dr. Conway has mentioned it on several occasions that now that he's changed his way of thinking, changed his diet, changed his lifestyle, that he's really practicing health care and not so much sick care. And so you've heard it from on documentaries previously of, you know, we don't have a healthcare system, we have a disease management system. And I think that goes back to now that people have to take control of their own life, be their own, as we've said, chief life officer, and just think that nobody is going to really take your health into a more positive, real purposeful dimension than you are. So I think anybody, regardless of where you are in life, regardless of what your health is, if you kind of just follow these simple nine principles, mm-hmm. Your life will change.
I know, and I think that's what's so crazy, is that I think these nine principles that they have found in these areas of the world that have led to them living the longest, for them, aren't things that necessarily they think about every day. These are just things that are built into their culture. And unfortunately, this is not our culture, so we have to think about it a little harder, you know. But
it's almost like this is the byproduct of their everyday life.
Yes, and what's happened is because their lives live out this way, they've, you know, one of the, this book is just so interesting, and one of the, I'll never forget the little, the start of the chapter, I think it was in Costa Rica, where the lady they went to meet with was 104, and when they went walking up to her house, she was outside chopping wood, you know, and it's just funny to me, because, you know, if you most see anyone living over the age of 90 nowadays, it's like most of them are probably living in a nursing home. Even younger than that. And so, you know, what we are trying to advocate here is so that people can actually live longer and not die longer.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of been our philosophy, our mission statement. So we're going to continue to go through some of these points. And so we've gone through moving naturally, identifying your ikigai, your purpose in life. You're not my ikigai, Jimmy.
Oh, no.
No. Not literally ikigai, but
right.
You actually are my ikigai. See, it sounds so weird. Okay, number three is to downshift. And this is, oh my goodness, something that we really struggle with here in the U.S., and that is our stress levels, trying to, you know, downplay the I think stress, and you can probably talk to this a little bit more about, I don't care how healthy you try to be, if your stress level is off the charts, what that does to you internally, just all everything.
Well, yeah, we live such a fast-paced life here in the United States, it's difficult to conceive, but, you know, everybody can downshift.
Absolutely. I think all these play on each other, and I think in order to downshift, you reanalyze where you are and you look to see that purpose in life and what is it you're trying to accomplish, and do you need all these things that you're doing in your life to be going on in order to accomplish that?
Well, I think if you really truly identify your ikigai, then an offshoot of that will be downshifting naturally.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, once you really find your purpose, then the things that don't contribute to that purpose, they have a tendency to fall by the wayside.
You know, this is interesting. It says on here that a couple of the ways these different cultures downshifted was Okinawans take a few minutes each day to remember their ancestors. Adventists pray. Icarians take a nap. And Sardinians do happy hour. I think I have some Sardinian.
I'm for all of that.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Why can't we take a few minutes to do all those things?
Well, you know, gratitude.
Day?
So
take a minute to have gratitude.
Take a minute to have gratitude and to remember your ancestors and the road that was traveled to get you here.
Absolutely.
Because you haven't traveled that road by yourself.
And happy hour. And I just am being, you know, trying to be funny on that. But I don't think that necessarily has to mean alcohol.
Absolutely.
I mean, I take that happy hour as being, you know, when you think about truly a happy hour, it's friends coming together.
Right.
And so no matter whether you're coming together maybe over a cocktail, but whether you're coming together over tea or coffee or any other way, it's a time set aside that you are downshifting and you are having that community, developing that community and fellowship. And that's one of the things that is the theme in all these locations is coming together as community and having a close group of friends and family that you connect with.
And that's called a moai.
Oh, a moai.
That's what the Asians, the Japanese especially, call a moai. And that is a close bond of friends in a local community that get together. So you guys are my moai,
yes,
obviously. And that get together, share their passion, share their desires, their interests, and cultivate a community where people share the same like interests. And, you know, in the book, they talked about some researchers talking about stress, that they were interviewing people and giving these Asians who stereotypically are supposedly really good in math, they gave them really high complex math equations to do, and then they tested their blood, and they had higher levels of antibodies in their blood after the interview than before because the stress had almost triggered an immune response to produce antibodies as if they had been attacked by a virus or a bacteria. So I don't think anybody anywhere can debate the
effects of stress.
The horrible effects of stress. So, and anyway, you know, I know some of these are silly, but some of the things that I try and do is looking at social media. If you look at social media and somebody posts something online, it could be, I won a $500 scratch-off lottery ticket. Somebody in that thread is going to say, oh, well, yeah, you're probably going to pay a bunch of taxes.
Mm-hmm. There's going
there's to be always reason. This negative mm-hmm. connotation mm-hmm. that people feel like stealing your thunder, pulling light from you is going to light their world. And I really try and absolutely do my best to never get pulled into that negativity. And that helps decrease my stress a little bit.
Well, and that's so easy today on social media. I mean, you have to be, I'm careful about what's in my feed and what I look at every day because that negativity, I think, is very detrimental to
absolutely.
Your psyche.
And even just stuff of, you know,
we have so much already going on in our world that we do here that's negative that you don't need that. As you know, on compounding and
it could be something as simple as, you know, food that someone's commenting on or bashing your favorite sports team to your favorite political arena. And I just think all of that kind of feeds into a negative balance in your emotional bank account, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so,
so continuing on with the nine principles we've covered, moving naturally, having a purpose in life, downshifting and reducing stress, The next one is, they call it the 80% rule, and I'm not good at this.
Hara hachi bu.
I know my husband is not good at this.
And I'm the worst.
Well, so what this, maybe if you spot it, you got it.
It is hara hachi bu.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not good at that either.
It is a mantra that you stop eating when your stomach is 80% full.
Right.
Although the last week I was forced to. So
yeah, he's kind of been a little down in the dumps. Down
under the weather.
Under the weather, and had not had the greatest appetite, but that is definitely not normal.
Normally, my appetite is not a problem.
I'm horrible at that as well. And so the Asians, their big push with this is to only eat until you're no longer hungry.
Right.
Not until you're really full.
I think the problem that I have with this is that we live... Okay, and again, this goes back to the whole concept of this whole idea, but that we live such fast-paced lives,
right,
that we sit down and we eat and we scarf our meal down, and before, I don't even know I'm full because I've eaten so fast, my brain probably hasn't even had time to register how much I've eaten. If I ate slower and more mindfully...
Maybe eat on purpose and with purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. And when you're eating slowly, and you know, there's talk about taking a bite and putting
your
fork down. You know, I mean,
I can barely do that.
I can't either. I'm afraid someone's going to take my fork and my food. So
this is definitely a principle that we, you know, after I read the book, I really thought about that for a while, and then of course, you know, life comes along and we forget and. I definitely can learn more from that. And, you know, they say that the 20% gap between not being hungry and feeling full could be the difference between losing weight or gaining weight.
Right. And in the book, they talk about insulin-like growth factor 1, that people that overeat have a higher IGF-1 production, and that correlates into living a shorter lifespan.
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
Yeah, any way you slice it, there's nothing good about overeating, ever.
And they they eat their smallest meal, you know, late afternoon, early evening, so their dinner is their smallest meal of the day, and don't eat anything until the rest of the day until morning. So I think they eat their, sounds like, you know, breakfast and lunch are their biggest meals,
right,
and then something small in the evening, and which I do agree. I think you need, I really, really try to push people to eat breakfast and to try not to go without breakfast, because I think that that's what fuels your day.
Right.
I know there's all this back and forth about, is that really true? Should you eat, you know, big breakfast, and what does that mean? And I think it's important to have that fuel in your body. And especially when that's the time of day when you're actually moving and burning calories and doing things, that you want to have that fuel. It's in the evening, having that big, huge meal, and then just, you know, doing what you do, sit and watch TV or whatever, and you're not really burning those calories. I think that makes a lot of sense to do it that way.
I need to work on that.
Yeah.
So to be mindful of that, when they sit down, that hara hachi bu is a little bit of a chant that they actually say out loud.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that they're mindful of it, and they, you know.
Well, maybe if I could remember hara hachi bu, I could remember to actually say that as I sat down.
You know, I wonder too if maybe if we took our plate and we just took 20% off.
Made
said,
your plate, then
yeah,
took that off and said, okay.
I'm going to take this home with me. If you were at a restaurant or if you were at home,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know, put it yeah, aside. So,
yeah, I think in a restaurant, that's probably easier because you can say, okay, I'm going to take this home. But when at home, when you have the whole pan there in front of you,
right,
it's harder to say, I'm not going to eat any more of
that's
this.
That's really difficult. Yes.
So the next thing that they do is they have a plant slant. So they call it this because they are not 100% plant-based in these communities. But I would say they're probably 90 to 95%
mm-hmm,
plant-based. And so they focus on beans, you know, vegetables, fruits, all those things. And their meat even when they do eat meat, it really is a condiment, a seasoning. They might take a chunk of, you know, pork or something, a very small pork, and use it to flavor a huge pot of soup. Or, you know, it's just in one of the communities, the only time they really ate beef or pork was one of the annual festivals where they would butcher a pig or cow or something.
It was a hog primarily.
And the whole community shared it. It wasn't, you know, we do something like that now and it's enough for one family, puts it in the freezer, you know.
Right.
I mean, this is for a whole community to share. And so it's definitely, and that's what I try to get people, you know, when we talk about eating a whole food plant-based diet, you know, we get a lot of, oh, I can't imagine giving all this, you know, meat, my protein, I have to have it. And so I try to do the same thing with people like that and do not make the meat the main focus of the meal. That's fine. You can keep, you know, keep adding some meat, but do it in very small quantities and start. And to me, it's a, what do I call that? Like a pushing
crowding out.
Right. Idea or theory, because you start filling up with all these other vegetables and beans and stuff, and you naturally eat less of the other things because you're full because you know all the foods that we recommend eating are so high in fiber that you fill up on those much easier than the meats.
When we talk about this, most of these places, they eat meat about, it comes out to an average of about once a week, and it's about 3 ounces. So
we're lucky if I can get people to eat three ounces at a meal.
Right. Right.
Right.
Once a day.
I mean, when I was eating meat, somebody put 3 ounces in front of me, I would have been offended.
That's right. That's like that little muse that they give you at a fancy restaurant as like a little sampler, you know.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Bacon wrapped scallop, you know, so.
And I have specifically like this next number of in there. Nine power, what do they call it? The power nine.
Correct.
Is wine at 5.
Right.
You know, and I think this goes back to the happy hour idea. And whether or not you drink wine or want to drink wine, which red wine has shown to have health benefits, which in Sardinia, they drank this red wine that was very high in
antioxidants. Because they actually ferment the wine with the grape seeds, and the grape seeds have a lot of the antioxidants as opposed to the way most of the wine here in the United States is fermented. But the wine in Sardinia had like double the amount of antioxidant capacity that regular red wine had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key to this as well is the fact that they didn't just do this on their own. They did it.
This was a part of their community living.
This was part of, you know, all the, maybe the men in the village or, you know, the women, they all got together during this time of day where they slowed down for a minute, came together, maybe had a drink and just talked. And I think that's, if we all just took that time, just that little, whether it's even 30 minutes. I mean, I think it just makes, I know when I just have 30 minutes that I can just sit and chat with a friend, it makes all the difference in the world.
You know, last weekend I went to dinner with, you all know, my friend from high school, Tom Hoke, and his wife. And we went to a local place here that has a lot of plant-based options. And we just had a great time. We did have a couple of glasses of wine. And we had a wonderful time. And the next day he said, thanks so much for inviting us. And just, you know, a very, very nice text. And really I said, you know, this is what our lives should be made up of, you know, mm-hmm. of friends and community and family and all of the things that I think when you're kind of speeding through life, you overlook. And when I turned 50, I think it happened overnight that I realized that maybe I was a
little time to take a look.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
We're going to take just a real quick break here, and then we're going to continue our discussion about
the Blue Zones.
The Blue Zones.
Yeah.
All right. We are back.
Oh, we're back with a vengeance.
Little break here. And yeah. I just wanted to say, too, if you're listening and you have any questions, we're always happy to talk to you on air at 672-1220.
If you need some help identifying your icky guy, just call on in and we'll help you.
Randy will be your icky guy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
so
right.
So we are talking about the blue zones, the places in the world where people live the longest and what they do, what their lives are like, that they, the documentary, not documentary, what do I want to say?
Research project.
The research project that identified these places and these people. These are the things that they've identified these communities do that have created the ability to live, actually live longer and not be sickly and live well into their, you know, being 100, 104. So we've identified the first one as move naturally, meaning not running to a gym and running marathons and doing CrossFit.
It doesn't have to be that.
It can be
drastic.
Just something simple as going for walks, tending a garden, just moving naturally, getting up every day and moving. The second one was identifying your purpose in life, identifying your ikigai, and knowing the reason you get up every morning. Number three was downshifting, was finding ways to de-stress your life. And I think there's just, we talked about a few things, ways to do that by just taking the time to maybe visit with friends, to say a prayer, visit and show gratitude for your ancestors, just anything like that, that you can take time to reflect and be grateful. The fourth one that we all said we had a hard time with, the 80% rule, Harahachibu, and that
we're going to start that tomorrow.
To eat until you are 80% full, eat until you are no longer hungry, which can be hard when you're eating very fast. So slow down and be mindful. Number five, having a plant slant, meaning 90% of your calories come from plant-based foods. The meat is a very, very small portion, a condiment, a flavoring, very small amounts, focusing lots on beans, fruits, vegetables, whole grains. Six was, they call it wine at five, I call it happy hour, and whether wine is actually involved or other cocktails, maybe it's just tea and a time with friends to visit. I think that plays into downshifting and being able to just take that time to be mindful and relax each day. And so now number seven is belong. And I think this is so important because we talked about depression being one of the leading, with the World Health Organization
identified
depression as the number one
health concern worldwide.
And I think that's because a lot of people don't feel they have a place to belong. And I think that's really important. And no matter what that is, whether that's in a community, a spiritual community, whatever that might be, being able to belong somewhere and identifying where that is, I think that goes along with having a purpose in life. All these really intertwine and feed off of each other. Number eight is loved ones first. And they always put their family first. You see generations of people living in the same household or living definitely in close by communities. They're very close and I think have a very high respect for their ancestors or higher generations about what they've done that has led to where they are now.
You won't find that anywhere any more prevalent than in the Asian community, where you'll see grandparents and great-grandparents and the parents and the kids all either living together or
grandparents helping to raise the kids, but
exactly
within the
right.
household. You know, it's not because the parents are no longer a part of the picture, which is unfortunately
a lot in the
United
American
States, mm-hmm. but that it's generations helping each other raise their families and
I think
that's important. Right. And then number nine, they call it right tribe. And it says the world's longest lived people chose or were born into social circles that supported healthy behaviors. And that's where you talked about, Randy, you're identifying your MOAI, groups of friends that were committed to each other for life. And in some respects, that's kind of what we've tried to create here with Plant-Based OKC and having our you know, our every Monday meeting at Rococo once a month, is we certainly have a lot of our regular followers come to this meeting to just be able to say hi and talk to us and talk to others that have the same like minds as they do about being healthy. And so I guess you could say our meetings are, we've created our own Moai. We've
Absolutely.
Created our own group of where we all have the same thought in mind of, you know, help being healthy, and we're all coming together.
So oftentimes when people ask me, and I'm sure as they ask you, like, what is it you all do, or what is it you're trying to achieve, or like, what's behind the curtain, you know? And I say, well, there is no curtain. There is nothing behind the curtain, because what you see is what we do, and what you see is what we are. We're not trying to get you to come to a seminar to sell you a supplement. We're not trying to get you to come to a health forum so we can get you to sign up for something else.
Some pyramid scheme or something.
That's right. That all we're trying to do is to get you to see the value of taking control of your own life and changing your health destiny and changing what you eat for the better. And it's going to benefit you, and it's going to benefit your children. So it's a real simple message.
It's funny that
message.
You say that, though, about people saying, well, what are you really after? I mean, that we all have this mentality that somebody's not doing something for free, that there's always some underlying agenda that, you know, we're after. And I'm happy to be able to say that that's not the case for us. I mean,
right.
Really what you see is what you get. We're here to provide this information to everyone because we feel like no one else is going to provide it if we don't.
Sure.
And so it's important. And as America, we're getting sicker and sicker. And we want to, hopefully, if we can make small changes within families, that we can change that for generations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think because of the psychology of change is so difficult, that having a group to belong to that has the goal of being healthier part of it helps make that change. I mean, whenever you talk to somebody about making any type of change, it is very threatening.
It's very emotional. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned over the years of us. You know, we've been doing these seminars now for six years, you know. And, you know, to me, you go in, you hear the science, and it's like, okay, well, you've heard the science. How can you not make the change? You've heard the science. Just go out there and do it.
Right.
You know, and I think I've finally come to realize the emotional tie that people have to making a change and making such a drastic change in their lives, because you're going against everything that you learned growing up. You know, you learned you needed milk to build strong bones, that you needed red meat to have your protein and build muscle, or you couldn't grow without it. I mean, all these things that we've learned, and we're basically telling you that throw all that out the window. You don't need all that. That you can thrive and live on a whole food plant-based diet and not get sick and live and to be 100. And it is very, very scary and emotional for people. One of the things I wanted to touch on, talking about the emotion that people have, it just, you know, in America, we seem to have this, I don't want to call it worship of food, because I don't know that that's what it is, but we certainly have a tie to, if we all get together, say Thanksgiving, for instance. I mean, people can't fathom that we can actually celebrate Thanksgiving because we don't have a turkey. And we've talked about, I think we talked about that around Thanksgiving.
People ask me every year, what are you going to eat? And I,
just food.
Yeah.
And I so thought, I,
it's not about the food.
I know. And I had this come up in one of our little Monday night Rococo meetings. And two couples that were there were saying they were going to get together and have this, you know, celebration, but they had planned on having steaks, and they were almost to the point of they didn't even know if they could get together and still have this celebration, because they weren't going to be able to grill out steaks. If they didn't eat steaks, they weren't sure what they were going to do. And I said, well, is this a celebration of the steak?
It's the festival of the cow.
That's right.
I'm confused. Why are you saying that you can't get together to have this celebration? This is supposed to be about your friends and you and coming together and being social, and you can throw anything on that grill. It doesn't matter. I mean, that shouldn't be the point of it.
The festival of the cow.
You know, it's just funny how we have made that. We can't get past that emotional stigma of those things that go along with, you know, hot dogs and baseball and turkey on Thanksgiving and ham at Christmas or whatever it is. It's like we can't have those events without those particular foods.
Well, and one of the reasons being is because these food manufacturers have brought in all these researchers to figure out what we can get addicted to. And one of the hot new things that kids are really flocking to is at a fast food restaurant here in town that they start serving them at 11 o'clock at night, a honey chicken biscuit, okay? So it's a biscuit with chicken on it, and it's infused with honey. So what do you have? Salt, sugar, and fat. Mm-hmm. And if you drive by this restaurant at night, the line will be out to the street with people flocking there because they are just so addicted and emotionally craving these high salt, sugar, and fat foods. So,
yeah, there's no question that comes into play.
It's amazing. So,
well, one of the things I try to get people to focus on, you know, it's all, and to me, it just, the most important thing that we've talked about today and all these power nine, identifiers in these different cultures is identifying your reason for being. Because I think when it comes down to it, most people that I talk to, the reason they come to our seminars and they want to know about staying healthy is because, you know, they want to be healthy for their kids and their grandkids. I mean, that was basically the reason you started doing this. You identified that, you know, I want to be there for my kids. I have young kids and I want to be there. And I think that's the key for a lot of the people. And so I think it's identifying that emotional connection to why you want to be healthy. Because otherwise, to me, continuing to do the same thing, I know people might get offended about that, but I think it's a selfish thing to do. To stay that way.
Well, yes.
Because you're focusing in on this is what makes me happy. Eating this honey chicken biscuit is making me happy right now. I don't care about the consequences of that and what's going to happen. I just want to make myself happy right now. And that's to me, just a very selfish mindset.
Especially when you see the heartache involved in people dying prematurely. I mean, it affects generations.
I mean, I still have people that tell me, oh, my dad died, you know, at 42. I was only 10 or my, you know, mm-hmm. And that obviously affects them to this day.
Especially as they approach the age that their parents
died,
then they get all wrapped up in this. Well,
am I going to die?
Is this going to be it for me? And when you see the heartache that premature death has, I mean, that really is one of the fuels that keeps me doing what we do. It's because I can see the heartache left behind by so many people. You know, recently we went to a wedding where the bride's dad died at the age of 52, and he wasn't there to walk her down the aisle.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's just reinforcement of this heartache that this premature death causes that, you know, it's not something that we have to go through.
No. And many times it's not even premature death. It's premature debilitation due to something mm-hmm. that happens. And so then you have families having to take on the either the burden of care or the financial burden of taking care of a loved one and what that can mean to a family.
Well, I just had a patient right before we came in here told me that tomorrow she's burying her husband, who had been sick with cancer for, I know, at least 2 years that I've been treating her. And it was, you know, it was almost a relief at this point that she got to the point where he finally passed away. But, you know, cancer, heart disease, these are diseases that rob us of so much that we really don't even know.
Well, and even diabetes. I mean, I think people take diabetes so lightly and, oh, I just have to watch what I eat. I just have to have that Diet Coke or this
Right.
And but what it's doing, and eventually the, you know, what it does to your eyes, what it does to your, you know,
extremities
because of poor circulation. I mean, it's probably more debilitating in that respect than a lot of them.
Because it's so insidious, and it's not something that, you know, a heart attack is something that, boom, it happens, and 50% of the people are diagnosed time of sudden death. Well, they don't linger after that, but, and diabetes is one of these diseases that's just, it's the epitome of what you say, Randy, is that we're not living longer, we're dying longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because with type 2 diabetes,
right,
it's a long, lingering, suffering existence.
And, you know, I meet patients that are having a leg amputated, and they say, yeah, my doctor says if I continue doing what I'm doing, I'm going to lose the other leg. And I just kind of look at him and think,
don't you think it's time to make a change?
I'd turn the car around if I was you.
Well, I think the statistics are that for diabetics, if they lose one leg, 50% within 12 months lose the other.
And it's just crazy to think that, you know, all you got to do is give up some of those unhealthy things, unhealthy foods that you've been eating and that you continue to eat. And
that you really can be in control of your own health. You can turn your life around, and it's never too late. I mean, you know,
as long as you're still breathing.
My husband always says, as long as you're still breathing, it is never too late to make that change. So whether you're in your 20s or you're in your 80s, you can have an effect on your health by changing what you eat. So to wrap up this real quick, because we're starting to run out of some time. We are Plant-Based OKC, and we talk more about, we get more in-depth about the science behind what we've been talking about, a whole food plant-based diet, at our monthly nutrition seminars. And our one this Saturday, like I said earlier, is full, but our next one is February 24th. We would love to have you come if you're interested in that. They're free of charge. I serve a plant-based lunch, and we spend about 2.5 to 3 hours going over the science behind how to basically live a longer life without the burden of medications. I have a lady that I'm working with that just got taken off 8 different medications.
Wow.
And so the burden of just keeping up with all that and paying for all those medications and all the side effects she was having from the medications. And I mean, that's a lot. And so she's feeling great. And that's what I hope that we can help others with.
Well, when you look at the amount of people that are on one medication or two, or most geriatric patients that are on dozens of medications, starting out with some simple lifestyle changes are so important that, you know, they can get off almost all of their medications. You know, we've said this before, that out of the 196 or so countries in the world, there's only 2 countries that allow pharmaceutical companies to advertise directly to the consumer. The United States is one, and New Zealand is the other. And so, you know, the guy who's good with a hammer thinks everything's a nail. If you've got medication to sell, you want people to take it.
Oh, that's true.
And so, you know, I always say the 4 most hated words in medicine are "go ask your doctor." You know, I just get the impression that your doctor doesn't want you to come in and say, "What about Farxiga?" or "What about, you know, something else to lower my A1C.
Well, just this morning we were listening to a commercial about, I don't even remember the name,
aromatase inhibitor.
But the drug they were talking about was an aromatase inhibitor to for cancer patients, and there was, you know, like the typical 30 seconds of all these disclaimers about all the terrible things
might
it could
cause
do to
blindness
you.
And
whereas
aromatase inhibitors are found in
mushrooms
yeah.
and they don't have the side effect.
Well, and that aromatase inhibitor they were talking about wasn't no $20 copay either.
That's true.
No.
You know,
those name brand drugs are high.
Super
so high. Aromatase is the enzyme that converts testosterone to estrogen. And so women that have had breast cancer, if they do something to block aromatase, then they have a lot longer chance of living without a recurrence of breast cancer. And so this was a drug that was developed for women that have had metastatic breast cancer to prolong their life expectancy. And aromatase was discovered in a mushroom, and it's such a powerful anti-cancer agent in its natural form, but it doesn't have all the side effects that were listed under.
But
this.
Mushrooms are cheap, and pharmaceutical companies don't sell them.
That's true. And so, you know, I was just pointed out this morning the irony of the fact that they've developed this pharmaceutical that is found in mushrooms, and then they're having to list all the side effects that this drug that they developed causes, including death.
Yeah,
I just never ceases to amaze me all of the side effects that pharmaceutical companies have to list on their commercials and on the packaging. And I almost wonder now if it's just somewhat like a template that they just say, let's just list everything.
But what's crazy is people still go in and ask for it
because
they still think what it might do for them is better than the side effects, I guess. I don't really understand it, but
yeah,
they still go in and ask for those drugs no matter that all they said all those things at the end of that commercial.
Well, we've been conditioned to expect that drugs will
help
make
us
better.
Right.
And we haven't been conditioned to expect that, well, for every drug, there's 20 side effects that can occur.
Including death, so.
Well, we are challenging you to identify your
ikigai. That's right.
And
it could be Randy.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Your reason for being, and hopefully when you can identify that and identify your purpose in life, you can use that for the better of deciding to make those changes that need to be made and to get healthy and to live a longer life. And if you've identified that and want to learn more, certainly we would love to see you at one of our events at plantbasedokc.com, where you can get the information, or follow us on Facebook.
February 5th at Rococo is our
health
forum. February
5th is our next one at 6 o'clock p.m., 122nd North May in North Park Mall. We'd love to have you there, so call them for your reservation.
That's right.
Otherwise, we will...
When's our next seminar besides this weekend?
February 24th.
And so for everybody else, we just want you to come and do what?
Live life on purpose and with purpose.
See you next month.